We've talked so far about electric field, and so we defined what that meant, what a field was, and we talked about how it related to electric force, how it was sort of an improvement on an earlier idea of action at a distance. So we've talked about Gauss's law, which is sort of a more sophisticated way of thinking about the electric field and actually doing calculations that at the end of the day will actually be useful for applications. And we'll see that now a little bit this week, but really next week we'll start to see some of the implications of those things. What we're going to talk about now is what's called electric potential. So this is chapter 25 in your book. And so the first thing I want to do is start with gravitational analog. So you guys have studied potential energy before. And so let's just think about gravity for a moment in a little different way than probably you learned it. Let's think about a gravitational field, right? Because we've been spending all this time talking about electric fields. So here's the Earth, okay? And, you know, we're each standing on the Earth, okay? My great artistry. And so basically, we're being bound to the Earth, okay? And we're being bound to the Earth. Why? Because just like a positive charge, the Earth has gravitational field lines that are emanating from it, okay? So it's a gravitational body. You can think of mass as the charge of the gravitational force. So, and now we are charged gravitationally. We have mass. That's the charge of the gravitational force. And there's no positive and negative. It's if you have mass and you have mass, there's an attraction. Okay? So there is a field here that's being set up. And in the gravitational case, it's always attractive. So the force is actually going to be towards the Earth. All right? Now, there's a couple things about this. When I'm standing on the Earth, what were to happen if I were... Okay, so I'm at some radius r. Let's call this little r1. Now, what were to happen if I were to go to some other radius, little r2? What would be my potential energy? What would be my potential energy here relative to here? Is that the case? Mm-hmm. Okay, so... Okay. Yeah, let me want to make sure that I say this correctly. Okay. Yes, I'm getting it backwards. All right? So you have a difference in potential energy here and here. And now, if, let's say, you were to go into free fall here, all right? Okay, you're going to get a parachute. What's going to happen to your potential energy versus your kinetic energy? Okay. Okay. So the total energy is always going to equal the potential energy plus the kinetic energy. All right? So as one goes down, the other goes up. And that is essentially what's happening. This is a pretty unpleasant looking, but basically, so, okay, if we just had a pendulum here, okay, and we held this at some potential here, if I were to let it go, what ends up happening is that when it reaches its lowest potential, now there's friction here, it will have its maximum velocity, its maximum kinetic energy here, Okay? So this is just expressing this relationship. And the so this is what it looks like for gravity in a gravitational field. And we're not used to really thinking about field lines there, but that actually is how gravity is thought of. That's just, that's not, you hadn't gotten to that concept in the last semester. So we can actually think in a little more general terms. There's actually some work that's associated with moving, say, from this point to this point. So this would be the difference in potential energy between those two places, which in general, in the case that we have here, is the integral from R1 to R2 of the force dot ds. Okay? So I do an integral from here to here of f dot ds, okay, and integrating over this whole thing is going to tell me something about how much my potential changed and how much work has been done. If I go from R2 to R1, this work is being done by the field to move me down. Okay? If I'm going from R1 to R2, I have to do some work. A rocket ship, say. I have to do some work to go back up. But the amount of work that's done is this. And so this is an integral that you would have seen in 1303, okay, in mechanics. And this is very general. Now, there's a couple things about this. First, if we want to think about this in terms of electric field, well, let's draw that. So let's say I have a positive charge and a negative charge. So again, for positive charges, the electric field lines radiate outward. Okay? And so if I have some electron or some negative charge here, moving this charge around in this field is going to cause me to do some work. And I'd like to know what that would be. Well, it's important to know, if we know the electric field, how does the electric field relate to the force? Well, we've seen this relationship before, F equals QE, where this Q is the test charge, if you will. It's the charge that we put into the field generated by this positive charge. Okay? So this diagram is the same, essentially, the same diagram as we have for somebody in the gravitational field on Earth. Okay? And so we can rewrite this okay? So we can rewrite this so that we can, if we know the electric field, we can calculate what the potential is. There will be times when actually we know the potential and somehow we're going to want to figure out what the electric field is. And furthermore, we actually, okay, so this is what the potential difference is or the work is. But actually when we're talking about electrical phenomena, we actually, this is not as useful because of the same reason that we don't like to use the word force. We like to talk in terms of electric field. The reason is because this charge is explicitly in there. So if I want to know, you know, what is energy situation in terms of the vicinity of a particular charge, I can't really talk about that in terms of potential energy unless I know the charge that I'm putting in that field. And that's just undesirable. We'd rather not do that. So what's been done is that we actually define something called an electric potential. And it's actually a potential, we call it it's a potential difference. Now, this is not an electric potential energy. This is an electric potential. Okay? And this, we label with a V, not a U, and we use delta because it's a difference. For the same reason that we talk about the potential difference between two points, the potential energy difference, we're also going to talk about a potential difference. The absolute value at any given point doesn't really matter. What matters is what it is relative to some other point. Now, the electric potential is defined, delta V is defined to be delta U, or the work done, divided by this charge, if you will, the test charge that we talked about when we were talking about electric field. Okay? So this is how we prefer to think about things in terms of electric potential. Why? Well, because if I put my positive charge there, I could talk about what the electric potential is in the vicinity of that charge. I don't have to care at all in describing that electric potential what other charges I may put in its vicinity. I can do it in a way that's independent of what charges are there, so that later, if I put a charge Q there, it's transparent, I know what to do. If I put 2Q there, 3Q, a million Q, whatever it is, doesn't matter. I know what this potential is, and then I can figure out what the potential energy is just by knowing the other charge. I can do the hard part of the calculation, which is this part, independently of knowing what that other charge is. Now, the question is, what are the units here? Well, you can look right here. What are the units for potential energy or energy? Joules. Okay? And then what's the unit of charge? Coulomb. So this is joules per coulomb. All right? And if you could take joules per coulomb, joules themselves are Newton meters, so you can also say Newton meters per coulomb, okay? So that's one. And this equals 1 volt. So this is the new term. A volt is a unit of electric potential. All right? And you can actually say, well, how does this relate to electric field? All right? Well, in the case of electric field, an electric field is newtons per coulomb. Okay? So what I can also say is an E field has units of volts per meter. And sometimes it could actually be useful to think about it that way, because it's telling you essentially the potential change per unit distance. If I go through 1 meter, I have this potential change. That's what the electric field is telling you. It's the rate of change of the potential with distance. Okay, which is a little different way that we've thought about the electric field. But again, a lot of times, sometimes it's useful to think about electric potential in a problem because you want to know something about the energy. Sometimes it's useful to think about the electric field. So going back and forth, it's useful to do that. Now, the other thing about this is, see if we can go through an example here, is that... If we consider the generic case where we have some field lines and we start at point A and we end up at point B, okay, Now we saw that we want to get the electric potential. It's going to equal the integral of E dot ds. From x1, well, let's just call it A, to B. Okay? So that's our delta V. Now, the question here is, again, this could be actually a complicated integral if we have to do it explicitly. What if the electric field is a function of position, and now you've got an angular relationship with this dot product? That integral is not going to be so pleasant to do. But we're saved by one fact, which is that the electric, like the gravitational field, or the gravitational force, the electric field is conservative. Okay? All right? Now, what do I mean by conservative? I don't mean politically conservative. I mean that this is, there's a specific physical meaning to the idea of a force or a field being conservative. Okay? I don't know if, maybe an unfair question. Does anybody want to throw out their rendition? Sure. Okay, that's a very mathematical way to say it, but it's absolutely right. It's a good way. Does anybody else want to say it a little differently? Like, what is the implications of a conservative field in terms of how I go from point A to point B? It's independent. Exactly. Good. So I could go, Or I could just go straight. It doesn't matter. The potential, the difference in potential is only a function of the endpoints. It's like in gravity. The potential energy is only a function of the endpoints. The difference in potential energy is only a function of the endpoints. If I start here and I go up a mile, those two places have different gravitational potential energy, and doesn't really how I get to one or the other, that potential energy difference is the same. And that's the case here. So this dot product is there, it's important, but at the end of the day, the thing that really matters is what the difference is between these two points. And that's a result of the fact that the electric field is conservative. And just, so other conservative fields include gravity, but a non-conservative field, just to hopefully remind, would be friction. Because if there's friction involved in going from point A to point B, then if I go from point A to point B and then back to point A, that closed loop that you're talking about, you don't get back to the same energy level. You lost energy. You, as a net, you lost energy, okay, to heat. So that's a non-conservative force or field. Well, there's no field here, but non-conservative force. But here, electric field is a conservative field. So it allows you to know that this is independent of path. Another thing that's interesting is that this is a scalar product. So the potential is a scalar, and that will simplify when we go to add with multiple different charges and things like that. Let's maybe do a little more concrete example of what this might look like. Let's take a situation where we have electric field lines that are going down here. All right? So these are the field lines. And the electric field, the magnitude is constant. Okay? As we move through space here. The electric field at all points is the same. A reasonable approximation is actually near the surface of the Earth of the gravitational field. If I go up 100 meters, yes, I've gone up in distance, but the strength of the gravitational force has not really changed. I mean, you can make a precision measurement and it'll see a little difference, but it's not much changed. And so the gravitational field is constant for small distances with respect to the surface of the Earth. I have to go very far for it to change. But still, there is a potential difference, a significant potential difference at 300 meters to here, because there's a significant amount of work I got to do to get up 300 meters. Okay? So let's take this example, and let's consider a point A, and a point B, and a point C. Okay? And let's consider going from point A to point B in a couple different directions. One is I can go from point A to point B directly, just straight. And another one is I can go from point A to point B via point C. Okay? And so let's just see what happens here. So the distance that we have, S is going to be D. So this is the distance between A and B, little d. And let's also throw in this angle here is going to be 45 degrees, just the way that we did it here. Okay? We can write our integral and it's going to be important to keep your signs correct. This often gets a little confusing. But in any case, so the potential difference is given by this integral. And let's just consider if we take this path here, the direct route. All right? So if we take the direct route, what can we say about this dot product? What's the angle between E and DS? Okay? And when you have an angle of zero with the dot product, what happens there? Okay. Yes. That's right. So there's a cosine in here. Right. So you have a cosine zero. And so it just goes to one. And so then you can rewrite this, as you said, E. And since we know ds is equal to little d, it just becomes e little d. Okay? Okay, that's great. Now, whoops. I stepped up. It's the integral of ds. Okay? Now, we have e is a constant. So I can move that out. Integral of ds, and I sort of gave you the answer already. I was being sloppy. What is the integral from a to b over ds? Little d. Okay. So this gives you that the difference, the potential difference, is negative e little d. Okay? Now, there is an implication here for the direction, and hopefully I've done this direction correctly. The field lines here, as we did with the charge case before, and this is a little bit different than why I actually paused when one of you suggested something. It's a little different than the gravity because like charges in electrical phenomena repel. So what happens here is these field lines are actually pointing in the direction of decreasing potential. Okay? So I go from A to B, I'm actually going to increasing potential. All right? And so that's why you have a negative sign here. Okay? So keeping your sign straight is important. But this it's sort of, you could think about it a little differently than gravity, but that's because in electrical phenomena you have two different types of charge. Now, let's go through this leg. So this is the direct leg. Let's go through delta V ACB. Okay? Now here, we actually could break this down to two pieces. We could break it, because it so obviously looks like two pieces, we can break it down to the AC piece and then the CB piece. So, okay, can we simplify that at all? What can we say about the first or the second integrals? It comes down, think about the angular relationship between E and ds in these cases. So what's the angular relationship between E and ds for this leg? 45 degrees. Okay, so that's not going to simplify the trigonometry. What about here? What's the angular relationship? 90. So what's a cosine of 90? Zero. So this just, that goes away. Now, so I can rewrite this. It's a little more complex than what we had before, but not much. Here, I then have the cosine of 45 degrees. Okay? So if I bring this up here, and I can, E is a constant, cosine of 45 degrees is square root of 2 over 2. So now what I have is E Sorry, that's so sloppy. And so now this is, now I'm integrating from here to here, A to C over ds, all right? So this actually has, that's not d, okay? D is the vertical distance, but I've also got a horizontal distance that I'm traveling to. So this actually becomes the square root of 2 over 2 times d. Okay, it's just, this is a 45 degree angle, so it's Pythagorean theorem. This is d units, and that's d units. So the hypotenuse is the square root of 2 over 2 times d units. Okay? So if I multiply all this out, okay. I'm thinking about the trigonometric functions, but not. It's just square root of d. Okay. So what I end up with is the square root of 2 over 2 times the square root of 2, that just becomes a 1 minus ed. So what did I get? I end up getting minus ed, which is the same thing I got when I took the direct path. So the fact that I took a more complicated path is irrelevant to the final answer for delta V. Okay? There's a couple of things to keep track of here that it just would be good to keep track of. Wish I had more space. If you have an electric field which has some direction, and I have a positive charge here, and I want to move it with the direction of the electric field, okay? In this case, the E field does work. Why? Because it's basically saying, I mean, one way to think about this is you could say, well, that means there's a positive charge back here that's going to push this thing away. Okay? Again, it has to do with the example that I was mentioning before. So whenever this positive charge is in this electric field, it's going to move this way. So without me touching it, the electric field is going to accelerate that charge. So it's doing work. It's turning the potential into kinetic energy. Just like if I dropped, or, you know, just like this pendulum. Okay? So we have E does work here. Now, obviously, if I change the sign, then for me to have this thing move in this direction means that I have to do work. Okay? Because this negatively charged thing wants to go this way. So I've got to push it this way. I have to do something to make that happen. So I have to do work to give that electron some kinetic energy to go in that direction. Or even forget the kinetic energy, just to get it to move from one point A to point B. Okay? So keeping the orientation of the E field with how the potential is changing is important to do. Okay? And since we have two charges, it's important to keep it, you know, keep the configuration straight in your head, what happens in each case. Okay? There's actually one thing that comes out of this. I mention it because, partly because it's what we do here at SMU, which is particle physics. But in particle physics, not just in particle physics, actually, in nuclear physics, in solid state, condensed matter physics, different fields of physics, when we start talking about things at the particle level or at the atomic level, so we may have a positive charge here and a negative charge here, we actually start talking in terms of a little different units. And you may run across this. There are problems in the book where these units are used. And depending on the kinds of ways that you use physics, you'll run into it. So what it is that it takes some... So there's an electric field generated by, say, this proton. And I can even remove that proton and just say there's an electric field. All right? For me to move this electron this way requires me to change its electric potential. And so we tend to think about this, and we don't tend to talk about the potential energy difference, we tend to talk about the electric potential difference. So the amount of energy, okay, that you need to move an electron 1 volt. Okay, so I have a potential V here, and then I have a potential V here, B, VA, so at this point and at this point. And the amount, whatever this distance corresponds to, I'm going to have to do work to get it from point A to point B. And by doing work, I'm supplying energy. Okay? So the amount of energy that I need to do this, to move an electron by 1 volt, this unit of energy is called an EV, electron volt. Okay? And we use this a lot. There, we actually go a little further because, first, the magnitude of this is equal to 1.6, just multiplying through, 1.6 times 10 to the minus coulombs times joules per coulomb. So it's 1 times 10 to the minus 1.6 times 10 to the minus 3 joules. So it's an incredibly tiny number. Negative 13. Yeah, negative 13. Okay. Now, we also have this thing which I think you covered just at the very, very end of mechanics, which is that from special relativity, there's an equivalence between mass and energy. Okay, now this is not classical physics now, this is modern physics, but in any case, mass and energy are related by this constant, c squared, which is the speed of light. But what this means is if we actually ignore the speed of light, we just give it units such that it goes to 1. But we tend to think of this as also being a unit of mass. So in this case, for instance, a proton, the mass of a proton, is 1 mega electron volt. It's actually, I think, something like 932. So we actually use this unit, mega electron volt, or electron volt, to refer to energy and mass fairly interchangeably. The collider that we have at Fermilab, which is up in Chicago, can make collisions of 2 times 10 to the 12th electron volts. So this is 2 tera electron volts. Okay, so, and you probably used a tera from terabytes and gigabytes. So this is the next step up from gigabytes is tera. That's 1,000 gigas. And so this is 10 to the 12 electron volts. Okay? What's that? The electron charge is 10 to the minus 19th. Yeah, wait a minute. Did I? Whoops. Thank you. Okay, why don't we start again? Let's actually consider sort of the next level of sophistication. Let's take a point charge here, Q. All right? And let's... let me draw it so I can... We have some electric field lines that emanate from this charge. Okay? And what we'd like to do is we'd like to take... we'd like to look at this problem. We want to understand what is the electric potential from this point charge. So let's consider two points, here and here. So again, this is point A, this is point B. And so this distance here is r vector B, and this distance here is r vector A. All right? And I'm going to travel from one to the other. So, okay? And so I want to know what is the potential difference from going from A to B. Now, we know a couple things. Well, okay, before we do that. So, the potential difference is going to be VB minus VA. And so we can do what we did a bit ago. We have this... dot ds, E dot ds, okay? Now, we can do this a couple of different ways. First of all, before I try to simplify the dot product will go away, but if we do it now, it's actually going to make it hard to see what the final expression should be. So let me delay simplifying the dot product, and instead first put in Coulomb's law for an electric field. Okay? And hopefully it'll be obvious why I'm doing it in this order. All right? So Coulomb's law for an electric field is KQ over R squared, and then it's R hat vector. Right? So this is Coulomb's law for an electric field. And then this is going to get dotted into S vector, ds vector. Right? Now, by doing that, this piece actually becomes, it's going to be more useful to have done this, because r hat dot ds is going to be something that's going to be a little more intuitive as we go. So what this is going to be ds cosine theta, where cosine theta is the angle at any point for the ds. I mean, that's theta. So I have some ds vector here, okay? And then I have some I have some ds vector here. I changed the order. Some ds vector here, which is the path that I'm following. But then I have some E field vector, which is going in this direction. Okay? So those things have a relationship. The E field is radial, and the ds vector is along the path I'm taking. Is there a question?
Where's theta?
Theta, let me blow this up. So this path is ds vector, the tangent of the path at any given point, and that has some angle, theta, with respect to this E vector, which is radial. Okay? I'm just blowing up this region in here. Okay? Okay, does that answer the question? So I can replace r hat dot ds with ds cosine theta, but actually I can simplify this a little bit. Ds cosine theta, okay, is the component of ds along the direction of the E field. Well, the E field is radial. So ds cosine theta is actually dr. Okay? It's just a little bit, it's the little infinitesimal snippet of this path that's in the direction of the E field. And since the E field is radial, it's a dr. Okay? And I only care about the component that's parallel to the E field because of the dot product. Okay? Now, okay, fine. So now I can put this all together. So I have KQR squared dr. And this is something I can actually integrate. Okay? Well, first of all, K and Q are constant. So this is minus KQ integral from A to B of dr over r squared. Okay? And what this ends up being is KQ 1 over RB minus 1 over RA. So I'm just evaluating the integral at its endpoints. Okay? Okay, now, a couple things. Again, it's independent of the path. The only thing that enters in my answer here are these two radii, which are the distance from this charge to this point and the distance from that charge to that point. I don't really care how I got there. I don't care about the path. Now, to simplify life, what we usually do is we actually, this is a potential difference, but the potential, the absolute value of the potential at any point doesn't mean anything. I mean, it doesn't, the absolute number doesn't have any absolute meaning. I mean, it means something only in relation to the potential at some other point. So what we usually do is, which you do also in mechanics, but what we usually do is we take one of the potentials, we see if we can, for instance, define one of the potentials such that it becomes zero. And then the other, you know, then we're only evaluating it, the potential to one point. It's implicitly relative to some other point. And when we're dealing with radial problems like this, the place where the one of the potentials could go to zero is if I take my reference point to be at a radius of infinity. Okay? So if my reference is at r equals infinity, okay, so let's say RB is equal to infinity, okay, then I can simplify this by just saying that V, I don't bother saying delta V, it's just, I don't want it to confuse, but it's just, then it's just basically going to be KQ over R, okay, where I've now made it so that RA goes to R, you know, becomes R, right? And I have, of course, as often happens, this should say, this should be positive, so I'm going to replace it, but I must have swapped my limits of integration. Yeah, I'd have to look at it. I can check it in my notes when I post them, but I've got a negative sign problem in here. This should come out as V equals KQ over R. Okay? No, I got rid of that because I went...
Would that be positive,
though? This one, I think should be the way that we did the integral. But, No, maybe that is the place. I'll look at it. I'll correct it. I don't want to do it in a rush and then confuse things. All right? Take a look at it yourself, though. All right? That may be it, though. Okay? But it's V equals KQ over R. So this is now the potential for a point charge. Okay? And it's a scalar. And we'll talk about the implications of that next time.